This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Steve Jorgensen and for Indie Book Publishing, Archway Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The title of the book is Momentousness, and our... Did I say that right, Jason? Momentous.
Momentousness.
You're right. I knew you knew the title of this. Momentousness. Our author is Jason LeClaire. Thank you, sir, for joining me today.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Jason, I got close. Momentousness. Sometimes when your brain and tongue are working together, they don't want to cooperate. Tell me about your book. What is the title refer to, and what type of book is this?
Well, it's a fiction that looks perhaps like nonfiction in a lot of ways, in that it could be construed as a series of memoirs, but it isn't. It's all fiction. And the title, Momentousness, comes from the idea that it's the stringing together of a bunch of moments. And so it's not necessarily... a bunch of stories, beginnings and ends, but a bunch of snapshots in time, moments. And so I guess I could have called it moments, but that just didn't have the multi-syllable sound that I was going for. I could have called it momentous, but I'm not sure that I would quite call it a momentous work yet, and I didn't want people thinking that I was too stuck on myself to pronounce it so. And so momentousness popped into my head as a way of capturing that sense, that aura of moments, and yet making it a noun again. So that's the momentousness.
Well, I appreciate your clearing up that pronunciation. When did you decide you wanted to be an author, and how long did it take to write this book?
Well, I think, I'm not sure that deciding to be an author is something that happens. I think that I was authoring, I was writing, at a very young age. I started actually with poetry, and I still fancy myself a poet more than anything. But, I think that I was a writer, as soon as a pen landed in my hand and paper in front of me. This book itself actually grew out of a project that I was doing for school. I was working on my dissertation as a PhD candidate at University of Central Florida. And, things kind of took a turn, and my life changed a little bit, and being a doctoral candidate was no longer an option for me, but I had this project stewing in my brain, and I had to get it out. So probably around 2010, I started pulling together the pieces of it, and then over the next several years, we went through the exercise of creating a book out of the ashes of a dissertation, I guess you might say.
Tell me about the solitary breaks that you were able to take and how those impacted your writing.
I look at two particular breaks that I took back in 2011. Things were a little wacky in the world, in my world anyway, and I needed some breaks, and I had some friends and friends of the family that were willing to support me emotionally and spatially, I guess. So I escaped up to my mom and her husband, my stepfather, have a cabin up in the Asheville area, North Carolina. So I spent some time up there writing, and I've got another friend of the family that has a place way, way, way upstate New York, practically Canada, and I spent a week up there. And, it was really an opportunity to get away from the hustle and bustle of my normal life and all the stuff that was going on, and to just really concentrate on writing. And so I spent that time not just writing, really reconnecting with some of the big shots in my intellectual canon, Emerson and Thoreau, the Transcendentalists, some of the mid-20th century postmodern linguists. It's funny that someone might have a connection with those folks.
Right.
So I did a lot of reading, and really just the stories just started flowing. So it was during those times that really... momentousness started to take shape. And then it was, over the next year and a half that I started filling in the blanks.
In chapter one, you talk about Ralph Waldo. Are you referring to Ralph Waldo Emerson in your comment, or is that someone that's a character in your book?
No, it's Ralph Waldo, because he and I are on a first and middle name basis.
Okay.
I wrote that story, you know, probably right after reading him, and so I felt, you know, that kinship sitting out in an apple grove up in upstate New York. Can you hear me okay?
Absolutely, yes, I certainly do.
Okay.
Apologies, Jason, but my mind wandered into the woods. And into a beautiful setting of a cabin, maybe not so beautiful cabin, but enjoying the outdoor ambience of New York State. And I think it's your fault. I can just picture the beautiful settings you were in. Jason, when you began writing this book, what was your concept of target audience? Did you feel like this was a commercial idea, or were you writing to express your own inner thoughts and feelings?
That's a great question, because what it has become is not what it started out to be. It really started out, you know, as I mentioned, as a dissertation. And so it's really steeped in scholarship and academics. And, you know, my original audience were the seven folks that were on my dissertation committee. I wrote it really as an intellectual exercise. And, when I got to, that breaking point that one might call an end or, you know, the next step, you know, I stood back and I said, well, you know, is there more to this? I'm not in school anymore. I have the potential of a wider audience, but Lord, there are 6 billion people in the world. Why would I write this for just seven? So when you talk about the original audience, it was very different. And, just kind of a funny story. When I got to the point at the end, again, a breaking point, where I was working with my editor, who was also a brilliant colleague from that same doctoral program that I was in at UCF. She said, Jason, what is who is your target audience? And I said, well, it's Dr. Kidlong and Dr. Saper. And she's like, no, who did you write this for? Who's going to buy this? And so we had to go back and imagine this character. I called her Siobhan. And I actually, during the editing stage, began to hone the story more towards this popular audience embodied in this 20-something-year-old lesbian reader named Siobhan.
So that's just your target audience, though. You hope to have a broader audience than that.
Yeah, for sure. And so, once I made that breakthrough that this book could be written for somebody other than an academic, I expanded what I consider a potential audience. So now, depending upon how one wants to read the book, and there are many, many ways to read the book, I hope we'll talk about that a little bit, but, it can be, a very fun and sentimental, popular story that Oprah's book club might appreciate. At the same time, there's a thread of the story that addresses zombies and war and and violence and anger. So there are folks that would be a reader of an Anne Rice or even a Michael Crichton. And then there are stories that are just, sappy, saccharine sweet, where folks, the chicken soup for the soul folks might come in. So what started out as a very, very narrow audience, I've come to discover, and in becoming a bookseller at this stage, rather than merely a writer, I've discovered that lots of different types of people really do enjoy it.
Yes.
So, I'm excited by that.
That part is an important factor when you're writing a book, that a large audience would jump all over it. Is there a scene in here, or maybe two scenes, that you think stand out and the reader is going to gravitate toward?
Well, I'll tell you, there's a story. It's called Flag, and it is far and away the most popular story in the book. I actually released it before I released the book. It's kind of a patriotic coming-of-age story. So on the patriotic American holidays that that preceded the launch of the book, around the 4th of July, Veterans Day, Memorial Day. I released this, you know, several times for a week at a time. And had readers all over the world. And I think, you know, what really really excites people about that particular story, Flag, is that it's both patriotic and sweet, but it's also coming of age, and it appeals to folks on another level, the level of metaphor, which, you know, if you want to read this book in an academic or scholarly way, you'll find that metaphor is pervasive, and so it's all about this kid who's in love with the flag, as if the flag itself is this great, grand thing. And sure it is, but, you know, when you're 12 years old, you hold symbols in the same esteem as the things that those are symbols for. And so, you know, the poignant moment is when this kid realizes that the flag is more than just a flag. It's a symbol of America. It's a symbol of coming of age. And so, you know, I would say that certainly the final scene of that story, Flag, is probably one of the most popular and poignant moments in the book.
And you have another scene that includes Doritos, or at least mentions Doritos. What is that story about?
that's a fun story. It was actually it started out as a very tragic story, and my editor said, you know, you've got the guts here of a really neat thing, rewrite it. And so Doritos is about an absolute devil child. And, you know, there are other moments in the book, right? I'll use the word moments instead of chapters or stories. There are other moments in the book where this particular character may recur, but it's kind of a turning point for him. It's all about a knockdown, drag-out fight between this devil child who wants a bag of Doritos that his brother happens to have. And it was fun. It was fun writing that.
Is there any personal reflection in that particular story that you experienced as a child?
You might have to ask my mom, or she considered me a devil child. I'm sure there were times. But, you know, again, I like to stress the fact that this is a work of fiction.
Right.
That all the stories are fiction. And even though some of them may look or feel memoirish, the truth is that these came out of my imagination. Now, with that said, you know, any author will tell you that that they write from their world. And so certainly there are bits and pieces of people and places that I know or have experienced, the particular scene that I describe in Doritos is not one that I lived through.
Okay, I'll forgive you and get you off the hook on that one. How would you introduce this book to someone? How do you get people interested in reading your story?
That's a great question, because it's tough. Because, you know, again, it started out as an academic work. You know, a foray into this theory that I developed called semiotic arbitrage. And then it has, as we discussed, morphed into something more popular, you know, something that has been reimagined with a popular audience in mind. I like to tag it in this way. It's a novel collection that represents or presents a new way of reading and a new way of knowing. And, you know, I think that's kind of a teaser, and I'll admit that. But what I want people to take away from it is that there are stories that stand on their own. There are 30 great, I'll be brash and say well-written stories that stand on their own. And someone can go in, a casual reader, and pick out a few stories and love the book. And then there are different ways of piecing those stories together, randomly, or the way I presented them in the book, you know, in sets of threes and threes and threes, where depending upon which stories you read and in which order, there's a larger story that's available to you. And then, you know, to an academic, you know, I can say, hey, you know, this is a story, or this is a text that's designed to be presented digitally. That is an adventure in theory, and that theory is semiotic arbitrage, where I pull economic financial theory together with linguistics and semiotics, and present a way of understanding and of reading that is a little bit different from, you know, what we were taught in 10th grade.
What was the challenging part of putting your book together? Besides the fact there's 274 pages, how did you overcome those challenges?
Yeah, you know, there were a few challenges, and I've got to tell you, and probably most authors will agree, the difficult part of writing a book, I've discovered, is not writing the book. It's all that stuff that happens after you've written it. Because if you think of it as a child, almost, you know, you've spent 9 months, or in my case, you know, several years, with this thing in your womb, right? And so you give birth to it, and it is your child, it's your baby, right? It's your heart and soul. And then you have to go through a process where an editor picks your baby apart and says, hey, this works, this doesn't work, your baby's not perfect. Well, my baby's perfect, your baby's perfect. So that was difficult. And yet, you know, as I look back at that process, the editing process, you know, the back and forth, that discourse and the reforming of that child into, man, if we're going to extend the metaphor, into a toddler, you know, who is ready to go out in the world, you know, out of the bassinet in the nursery. As I look back at that, I'm like, wow, that was great. But I would say that absolutely the most challenging part has been taking off the hat of author and becoming book hawker. And you know, it runs counter, you know, that idea of being a businessman runs rather counter to a lot of the instincts of the artist. And so navigating those two channels, the artist and the entrepreneur, has probably been certainly the most challenging.
Well, thanks for sharing that. The book is Momentitiousness. All right, we'll get it.
Momentitiousness.
Yes, I knew that was it, Jason. I was just toying with you to make sure you knew the title of your book, Momentitiousness. Thank you, sir, for joining me today. I got close. Where do we get copies of your book, Jason?
Oh, lots of places. It's available at BarnesandNoble.com, Amazon.com. It should be out on iTunes pretty soon. It's on the Archway site. Or I set up a website, Momentitiousness.com, where you can actually get autographed copies, signed autographed copies, sent directly from me, because, you know, who doesn't want an autographed copy of a book that will one day be seen as a seminal piece of the 21st century?
And it might be valuable in a moment, in a monetary sense as well.
Yeah, I'd like to hope so.
First edition, absolutely. Well, thank you, Jason LeClaire, for joining me today. The name of the book, again, is Momentitiousness. I think I got
perfect.
It better.
Oh,
perfect, yes. Absolutely. A perfect book, a perfect read, and it's available from Archway Press. Thank you, Jason, for joining me today.
Thank you, Jay. Have a great day.
For Indie Book Publishing, Archway Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.